box office battle, where we take underappreciated movies, forgotten classics, and box office bombs and pit them against each other for the right to be on Mount Valhalla. I'm Biggs.
I'm the beard.
I'm the Hiccupy Zach.
Good thing Hiccupy Zach is, I guess, delivering a movie.
I'm gonna stumble through this. All right, disclaimer for everyone. I'm pretty good at keeping my hiccups silent, but it also makes me sound like a record that keeps getting bumped. So just, you're gonna have to get used to it.
You know what? I'll go first, just to give you a little more time to get it under control. So today we're doing video game movies. Mortal Kombat kind of inspired us last week. So this week I'm doing the 1994 classic, 20-year-old, I can't believe it's 20 years old, Double Dragon, starring Alyssa Milano.
Can we just, for Adrian's sake, that girl is fine.
She is fine, dude. There's no question about it. In fact, we're just going to divvy into the song list of Montucky Skies to appreciate Alyssa Milano for a second. And I might add that if you've seen Embrace of the Vampire, and I think there's a lot of guys here who have seen it, you know what I'm getting at. Yeah, that's all you need to see. I've seen the whole thing, but you only need to see parts.
You know, this song works for my movie as well, because my movie features a mud bath.
With who?
Koopa. King Koopa. And Lena.
Okay, so my movie, once again, 1994, is Double Dragon. So this movie is about brothers Billy and Jimmy Lee, who have an adopted mother, I guess. And she has half of a amulet, which is known as the Double Dragon. Now, the first half of the amulet...
Did they call it the Double Dragon?
They did, yeah.
So they worked the title into the movie.
They totally worked the title.
All right.
The movie. So the first half we see is possessed by Robert Patrick. That's right. The T-1000 has it. And he can take it and then suddenly turn into a cardboard cutout that falls down and turns into a cartoon shadow and works over everything. So he's really deadly, guys, because he can become a shadow that strangles people.
Can he come out of the floor and kill people with finger spikes?
Why not? So this movie takes place in the future year of 2007 in New Angeles, because Los Angeles was buried underwater during some earthquakes, I guess, in like 2005, maybe? We'll just say 2005.
Man, I hated when that happened. That was a tragic, tragic event.
And by the way, if you're keeping track, this is the second future year of that's in the past in Box Office Battle, because I also did Predator 2, which I think was like the future year of like 1999 or something. I can't get enough of this. The Lee brothers have the amulet. They wind up running into Boa Bobo, who you may know is the boss in many of the Double Dragon levels, and he's a steroid user. And so they wind up somehow pissing him off, and so he goes chasing after him, and they wind up going into an alley, and he gets his car caught in the alley, and he goes to beat the shit out of him. But then Alyssa Milano leads a gang of ragtag individuals who go, and just on the threat of kicking the shit out of Boa Bobo, he backs off. And so they go back to their home, which is an abandoned movie theater. And she lets him know how important the amulet is and that evil will soon be following, find them. And apparently she knows her dad, but they don't really explore that. So in the meantime, Robert Patrick is taking over gangs and eventually comes after Billy and Jimmy Lee. And so they go chasing after him, and they have a car that's got like, basically they throw random things into an incinerator in the front, because guys, gasoline's not needed in the future. You can just throw garbage in like a fire pit in the front seat and it'll power the car. So it's environmentally safe, sort of, not really. Anyway, so finally...
They need to talk to Doc Brown and get the incinerator in the back.
That's right. Well, you know, it's only 2007. It's not 2015 yet. You know, the future year of 2015. Maybe we'll do Back to the Future when it's like 2016. That'd be a good call, right?
That would be a good call. Another Back to the Future episode.
Yeah, there you go. A forward to the future for the Back to the Future part 2. So basically, they wind up getting in a big battle. And Jimmy Lee and Billy Lee both have a crush on Alyssa Milano's character, who she tells her dad that the Power Corps, who is her gang of thugs who beat up the actual thugs, who have a kind of a treaty with the police not to attack people during the daylight, but during the nighttime, the streets are theirs. They go and they get shit done. So they both have a crush on her. And then this is followed up by her, like, bending down to, like, crawl through grates as they watch her, like, crawl through grates, like, kind of Lara Croft style in Tomb Raider. Y'all know who I'm talking about. If you play video games in the 90s, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so eventually, you know, shit works out for Billy and Jimmy Lee. I don't need to get too into it. They get in a bunch of fights and you know, they beat Robert Patrick in the end, and then they both possess the Double Dragon amulet. So it works out well in the end.
So I'm doing, from 1993, Super Mario Brothers. Fucking A right, folks. We got our boy Bob Hoskins as Mario. We got our boy John Leguizamo as Luigi. And they are on...
Are they actually supposed to be brothers?
Yeah, they're brothers.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know
this. Are they like half-brothers? Super Mario half-brothers?
No, they're real brothers.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I love the hiccups.
I'm super frustrated by them.
The hiccups are a character in this episode.
So to keep things short...
Game glitch.
Someone forgot to blow in the cartridge. So the Mario Brothers, to keep the plot synopsis short, they meet a beautiful girl named Daisy. Turns out she's Princess Daisy. King Koopa captures her. They travel across dimensions.
Really quick, what year did this come out?
1993.
Okay, so was this... Did they name the character Daisy yet, or was it based off of the movies? I feel like they named her by Super Mario Brothers 3. They probably had already named her.
Yeah. Okay. I just gotta check. I can't confirm it, but I'm almost positive Daisy existed pre-movie.
Oh, wait. She was Princess Peach before that.
No. Princess Peach and Princess Daisy are two different people.
Yeah. Daisy's the one with the yellow dress. Peach is the one from Mario 1.
I didn't know there was multiple ones.
Oh, yeah.
You don't play enough Mario Party.
I thought it was just the princess, like... But the princess is in and of the castle.
But that's Daisy.
Yeah.
Peach, or not Daisy, that's Peach.
Peach is Mario's princess. Daisy is Luigi's princess.
Okay.
So essentially, this is a rescue movie. It's a movie about the lowly, hard luck, poor plumbing brothers, Mario and Luigi, and their quest to rescue a true princess from a world that is very different from the one that they know. Because again, they travel across dimensions. Now, I'm sure you have some questions. How did the second dimension come to be? Let me answer that. Because see, the film opens with an animated prologue. The animated prologue features intelligent, content dinosaurs roaming through Brooklyn 65 million years before the events of the story.
Like Yoshi?
Like, but not Yoshi. Okay. Yoshi does appear in the film.
Super Mario World, not quite out yet.
No. This is 65 million years before the events of the film. And the dinosaurs are happy. There are mammals running around, mostly unnoticed by the reptiles. A meteor strikes. Now, in our dimension, this meteor wiped out all of dinosaurs, correct? Now, this meteor strike branched off into a separate direction where the dinosaurs continued living and even thrived to the point that now humans, because of their mammal ancestors, now have bits of reptile DNA in them. So they are lizard-like humans, which is, of course, where we get the Koopas and your Spike and your Iggy. So now we not only have a battle to save a princess, we have a battle that spans time and dimension itself. That is an epic conquest. I have to stay calm because these hiccups are just ruining me.
I could go through a lot of stuff, but I'm just going to keep it simple here. Alyssa Milano bending over.
I could go through a lot of stuff, but I'm going to keep it simple. Bob Hoskins bending over. No, I'm kidding. I will say, Bob Hoskins, perfectly cast. Dude looks like Mario stepped out of a TV screen and into the real world. The casting is spot on in this movie to the point that everybody really does look like a human version of their game counterpart, with a few exceptions. Like Toad, as he's presented in the film, looks nothing like Toad. But the Goombas are Goomba-ish. Yoshi is Yoshi-ish, as Yoshi-ish as you can be and still be believable in Dino Hatton. Oh yeah, did I mention, in the alternate dimension, Manhattan is now Dino Hat. And here's the thing. If you don't like big cities, that's fine. But if you do like big cities, and you truly in your soul don't believe that big cities could be improved by the addition of dinosaurs, all I gotta say is you're a fucking idiot.
One great thing in this film is they have a Smogcaster played by Andy Dick. He doesn't forecast the weather. He just forecasts the smog because it's New Angeles. We all know New Angeles has a problem with smog, guys, right? I mean, you know, Los Angeles had a problem.
And yeah, now Old Angeles had a problem.
That's right. Old Angeles had a problem. New Angeles, horrible problem. They also have Vanna White and George Hamilton playing themselves as newscasters, where they kind of take a RoboCop style look at the future, which is ingenious. Like, they just have all these things where it's like little glimpses into what would be a future, which led my mom to say the quote, "This movie would be so great if it was just the newscasts." Now, what my mom meant to say is this movie is so great because of the new casts, and I'd have to agree.
Now, I mentioned Toad earlier. Those of you who have played the games are familiar with Toad. A character like Toad is pretty hard to work into this world that they've built around the Mario and Luigi characters. So, how do you adapt a character like Toad? Well, let's talk about what we know about the film. The film takes place in an alternate version of Manhattan, which, from the 70s to the 90s, had a whole host of issues to deal with. We know that Dino Hatton and all of the world, for all intents and purposes, is ruled by the Koopas and their reptilian folk. Now, as we all know, if you've played the games, Toad is an enemy of the Koopas. So we make Toad a friendly punk rocker who writes anti-establishment songs dedicated solely to bringing down the Koopa regime. Now, there are going to be people out there who are not quite getting how amazing this is, so let me spell it out for you. Imagine if we lived in a world where the Clash weren't just rebelling against the man. The Clash were rebelling against goddamn evil dinosaurs. If you don't find some sort of whimsical magic in that, I mean, I guess you and I don't have anything in common, because an anti-establishment punk rocker writing hate songs against an evil dinosaur regime is everything I've ever wanted out of adulthood, and I'm still disappointed I haven't gotten it.
Did you say dinosaur?
That's what happens when you're really nervous about hiccuping at any moment, is you try to get through words as quickly as you can, and when you're burning through words, you're gonna make mistakes.
Here's the thing with my movie. It has such a high pedigree with actors. I mean, not only do you have Alyssa Milano, which once again, you know, Scott, Alyssa Milano's butt. You've got Scott Wolf playing one of the main characters. Scott Wolf, guys. And by the way, we have a Hispanic character playing his brothers. Now, they casted to make sure that they got the absolute best for their actors. They didn't care that one of them was Hispanic. Did Super Mario Brothers have that courage?
No, and here's why. Super Mario Brothers had a lot more courage in its casting. You want to take a shot in the dark at who plays the evil villainous Koopa? Just take a guess.
Al Pacino.
Academy Award winner Dennis goddamn Hopper. Dennis Hopper plays the bad guy. Dennis Hopper's an amazing bad guy. Anyone who doesn't recognize this is a fool. Now, I'm going to up the ante a little bit, because it's one thing to call a raise. It's another thing to raise against it. You know who narrates this film? Only one of the most amazing, purely recognizable. And in fact, it's a voice that has become so embedded in our psyche and our pop culture that it would honestly be a shame if I didn't bring it up. Super Mario Brothers, narrated by Dan Castellaneta. Homer Simpson himself animates the film, or narrates the film.
Now, that's pretty good. We got some talent on your side. We got some talent on my side. But we all know that a video game movie is only as good as its writer. Now, I haven't heard you mentioning the writer of Super Mario Brothers, but I doubt that it can hold a candle to the writer of Double Dragon. Say, Brandon, did you love Batman the Animated Series when you were growing up?
I don't recall that show.
Batman the Animated Series? Da-na-na-na-na. Really?
I watched a lot of different versions of Batman. You'll have to...
The first one. The first one that came out after the Tim Burton movie. Takes place in dark Gotham. Anyway.
I would hope all of them take place in Gotham.
Well, Super Friends, not so much.
That's not a Batman cartoon. It is a cartoon with Batman in it.
That's true.
It's not a Batman cartoon.
Okay, so this has Paul Dini, who is not only the writer of that, but the creator of Harley Quinn.
Bam! I guess I don't know what's sadder. That you had to, you make a great point. Paul Dini's an incredible talent. But here's the thing. If you want to pander to somebody with that, you got to pander to me, and I'm not judging today.
No, I immediately realized it was a mistake.
The other thing is,
which Batman cartoon?
I guess as someone who talks a lot about movie and thinks a lot about movies, I'm less interested in who the writer is as opposed to what they've written. And my writers, who are not names you'd know, but they are people who turn out an impressive feat in that they took a movie that has the most basic story in the world, no characters, no twists and turns, no B plots, no C plots, and they made a fully functioning film out of it. Now, people have had their problems with Super Mario Brothers, but here's the thing. It's a movie based, there's nothing to go with other than names. And the fact that they made a movie that functions, that has a progression to it, that has scenes that build off each other, it's nothing short of incredible. It is truly a task only people who've got a strong mind, a strong instinct can take, because all you have to guide you is instinct.
I have no idea what you were just talking about. But my movie, it's based off a video game where you kick the shit out of a bunch of people and then you face a bigger person over and over again. Somehow they took this into a giant plot that not only encapsulated the 80s, but really kind of was a calling for a generation. I mean, it's almost like the staying alive of our generation. And I gotta say, it does a great job in that. Now, this movie has aged poorly, but in the absolute best way. The graffiti, all neon green. The rap, all really bad trip hop from like 1990. This movie will make you feel like you're in eighth grade again, and make you feel like you're in puberty when you see Alyssa Milano.
Now, you may recall moments ago when I accused Biggs of pandering. I stand by that accusation because I believe it's true. That being said, and you can take this as an admission that I'm no better than you, I'm not above pandering. Folks out there, Brandon, you included, if you've played a Super Mario game, there are surely things that resonated with you that stick out in your memory. Guess what? Everything is represented in this film. You like the titular character? Obviously he's there. You like the princess damsel in distress trope? Locked up by a scary lizard monster? That's there. Let's get more specific. You like Goombas? Goombas are there. You like Thwomp Stompers? Thwomp Stompers are there. You like Bullet Bill? Bullet Bill's there. Do you like Ba-bombs? Because guess what? There are fucking ba-bombs in this movie. Everything you love about Mario is in this goddamn film. If someone has never played Mario and they want to get a crash course, you got 90 minutes. Watch this thing. It'll give you every bit of information you could ever love about Mario because it is all there, even down to the locations. Kupahari fucking Desert's in this movie. Most people don't know that Kupahari Desert's a place, but they found space for it in this film. Because if you're going to make a labor of love, then you represent the thing you love. It's just obvious.
All right. Is Shy Guy in there?
Of course the Shy Guy's in there.
Okay, you both made great arguments, and I'm really on the fence with this, and there's one thing I really want to know. Are there any characters, people who played characters, that have actually gone on to something else beyond this, other than, like, little-known characters that this actually was a stepping stone for their movie?
So you mean actors?
Actors.
Or, yeah. So Robert Patrick had not yet done very many things other than maybe the T-1000. He went on to do a lot of stuff. Alyssa Milano had not gone on to be naked. This movie was a stepping stone to that. Man, her butt was on full display. And they were like, hey, let's team with Penthouse and make a Race of the Vampire with this, which I'm pretty sure is how that worked. let's see who else. Scott Wolf went on to do some stuff. We don't really need to focus on that. Vanna White with Wheel of Fortune. Man,
she was doing a lot of Wheel of Fortune.
She continued it. George Hamilton did many things after this movie. You know, Andy Dick, when you see this, you're like, I hardly recognize Andy Dick. And he goes on to do Son-in-Law in the Army, news radio, all kinds of things. I would say that even though he did Ben Stiller's show, I don't think people really knew him from Ben Stiller's show. This really helped launch him.
To me, it comes down to two people. Fiona Shaw, who has a relatively small role, but is one of the primary antagonists as Lena, Koopa's lover slash secretary slash assistant. She went on to appear in True Blood and the Harry Potter films.
Who'd she play in True Blood?
I don't watch the show. I just know she was in it. Come on now. I'm not a True Blood guy. Right. I just know she's in it. Now,
yeah, you're pandering to me, so what about the Harry Potter? Where was she in Harry Potter?
She actually appears throughout a lot of them.
She's Snape. I don't know. I'm not familiar with Harry Potter. What is Snape?
What is Snape? Not who is Snape. What is Snape?
I don't know. What is Snape?
Snape is Severus Snape, the potions professor at Hogwarts.
See, he's got to talk about Harry Potter.
You asked me a question. Come on.
Yeah, that was a little unhanded.
Definitely getting a knockoff for that one.
I probably deserved it.
That was leading the witness, sir.
At least I would say, what is the Snape? That would have been really bad, right?
So since you asked, Fiona Shaw plays Petunia Dursley. She is the muggle aunt of Harry Potter.
Okay.
Yeah, she is actually, especially if you've read the book, she becomes a very important character.
Now, muggle's a person like me who's not magical.
That's
right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, I got
yes.
that much.
Yep.
I'm not magical at all.
Her character holds some importance in that her sister is Harry's mother, obviously. Snape, who you referenced earlier, was in love with Harry's mother, and Petunia had a problem with it. Petunia also lived her entire life jealous that her sister was magic and she wasn't. It's a pretty interesting character tension if you're familiar with the books or the story at all. Samantha Mathis, who plays Princess Daisy.
That's Samantha Mathis.
That's Samantha Mathis. Guess what?
She's almost as hot as Alyssa Milano. But not quite.
But here's the thing. We aren't talking about Heat, because I will give you credit. Alyssa Milano is hotter than anyone in my movie.
I know. That's the only card I'm holding on to.
I will concede that point. Alyssa Milano is hotter than anyone I have in my movie. It's just that I guess...
To be fair, she's hotter than almost any actress out there. Yeah. Even at 40, man.
I know. Oh, my God. I will say this, and maybe this is just me, but I'm a man about performance. And Samantha Mathis, in a lot of her work, but particularly in Super Mario Brothers, has this blend of cunning and innocence that you don't see in a lot of actresses. You usually get one or the other. You get the person who can play calculating, or you get the person who can play sweet. She's both in one package. She's a true dynamite talent.
And what has she been in?
Well, let's bring up her filmography and just read off some shit for you.
All right.
I'm going to need a second.
But while he's looking, I'd just like to remind you, Poison Ivy 2, Embrace the Vampire, Outer Limits episode where Alyssa Milano...
You haven't even got to everybody. Charm.
I haven't even got to Charm.
Charm, dude.
Charmed is the high road. I'm taking the low road.
I'm going to step out for a second. Charmed is what's up. That's all I'm saying.
Like I said, I'm putting the ones you'd see on Mr. Skin. Which, if anybody's taking notes, I'll repeat it. Embrace of the Vampire, her episode of Outer Limits, Poison Ivy 2. Not the best one, but there's still stuff in it. Not to be mistaken with Poison Ivy 1 with Drew Barrymore, or Poison Ivy 3 with Jamie Presley. There's a high caliber of actress that shows up for the Poison Ivy series.
Oh, yeah. Miriam McDonald of Degrassi fame. She's in Poison Ivy 4. What's up?
I don't think I've seen that one. Is it worth it?
I mean, it is. It fulfills every expectation you have of a Poison Ivy film.
Fair enough.
So,
by the way, do you know who's in Poison Ivy 1 who's not hot? Tom Skerritt. I just wanted to bring that up.
But Tom Skerritt's mustache? Definitely sexy.
Kinda.
So I'm just going to shoot out some of the highlights for Samantha Mathis. She was an American.
She's in Pump Up the Volume. That's topless.
True. She is topless and Pump Up the Volume.
Lowest denomination.
Yeah. So that's true.
That's all you need to know.
She's an American Psycho. She's in Buried, which is a really good Ryan Reynolds film.
I like that movie.
So her voice is in Buried.
Yes, her voice
only
is in Buried.
Ryan Reynolds.
But
is
she
in
was on set for the shooting of the film because all the actors were on set for the shooting of the film. She was most recently in Under the Dome. Closing argument, Fiona Shaw, Harry Potter, billions of dollars. Samantha Mathis, topless and pump up the volume in American Psycho. That's all I'm saying.
All right. This has been both great, great arguments on the end here. And as hard it is to go against Alyssa Milano's ass.
That's all I got.
And I mean, that is a huge mountain. Like, not huge, but like...
No, it's two mountains.
It's two mountains.
Pushed together.
They're more like real smooth hills.
Just rethink it a little bit for just a second.
I am. Don't you worry. That picture is ingrained in my memory.
Thank God I have to give it
to Super Mario Brothers for Bob Hoskins.
Yeah.
Even though they had... John Leguizamo.
Which, by the way, I was trying to like set you up for a joke with John Leguizamo was a Hispanic brother.
And I just did not bite.
Inexplicably with like Bob Hoskins. And you were like, they don't need to do that. I was like, you did that.
Yeah, I just straight up did not bite at all. I refused to play into your hands.
Yeah, I really wanted to stress that John Leguizamo was in your movie. Congratulations, sir. You saw through my ruse.
You have to give credit. John Leguizamo looks exactly like Luigi.
I don't know. I'll take your word for it.
That is also the highest compliment I can give his performance.
All right. Have you seen either of these movies, Brandon?
I have seen Super Mario Brothers, and I would give that a unsatisfactory.
That's probably the level we're working at. Yeah.
And I have not seen Double Dragon, so I will give it an incomplete. But I'm like, if based on your argument, it's definitely the unsatisfactory.
Okay, here's the thing. It should be an unsatisfactory. I admit it, but because even if you take out Alyssa Milano, which is great, dude. When you just like look at the cheese ball for a movie to have a beer with and laugh at, I gotta give it a satisfactory minus. Like, I just enjoy the movie too much. I can't in good conscience give it more than a satisfactory minus. It probably deserves like a straight up unsatisfactory, but I gotta give it a satisfactory minus. It just makes me laugh. I've not seen Super Mario Brothers. I intended to. I just didn't have time because my mom was visiting and I made her suffer through one video game movie. And like, she laughed and was enjoying my reaction, but I couldn't do it to two of them for her, so
that's fair.
Yeah,
there's something about traveling 1200 miles to see two
bad video game movies.
That's just cruel.
Which I guarantee she's not played the video game for Double Dragon. She played Super Mario Brothers, but I guarantee she didn't want to see the movie for that. Now, that being said, I might watch Super Mario Brothers to laugh or to write a funny review on, but I have no anticipation that this thing isn't a flaming pile of shit. I saw
it.
When I was a child, I saw the commercial for this movie and I was like, that looks like a flaming pile of dog shit. So I can't imagine as an adult I would think any differently. But Zach, how do you feel about these?
Well, I'm going to give an incomplete to Double Dragon on the Super Mario Brothers tip. You guys, it's a real piece of trash. Now, I'm going to give it a needs improvement minus, slightly higher than Brandon, because in most regards, I'd agree it's unsatisfactory. But there are two specific things that raise it to the needs improvement minus for me. One is, I just enjoy the shit out of the movie. It's so silly. It's so ridiculous. Like, I can't help but enjoy myself when I watch it. Like, I have a smile on my face the entire time. The other thing is like, because there's not really a story to be adapted from Super Mario Brothers, essentially what you're looking for is just a checklist of things that it brings from the game to the movie. And in terms of the checklist of things, it succeeds. So I'm willing to give it props for that. Like, it managed to bring in all the things it should have brought in.
It really, like, stretched and actually made a movie out of this.
I'm about to tell you something that happened from the movie that I knew that I held off on because I didn't think it would help my case, honestly. Bob Hoskins was so mad when he saw the final cut. They wanted him to do like a reshoot and he refused. He would not do any reshoots when he realized what he had like done.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was.
It's not good at all. But in those two very specific regards, it succeeds. So I've got to bump it up to the needs improvement minus. Can I just say my favorite moment of this episode was the look on your face when I said the name Dan Castellaneta? Like, there's the look of God damn it in your eyes.
Yeah, it was like a knife going through my chest, dude. I was like, I can't compare with that.
So that's all I got.
But it did help me remember the Paul Dini connection. Yeah. I would have thought when I said animated series for Batman, you would have been straight.
You know,
on
and that. I'm like 95% sure I've seen, like, dude, I watch a lot of Batman.
Here's the thing. It was the Batman when we were in, like,
is it the one with it was kind of dark, like, claymation, yes. Or they had a lot of clay face in it. Harley Quinn made her debut.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like from the time we were in maybe, like, it was like 1990 when it came out through like maybe 95 or 96. Like, it was the Batman cartoon that all the other Batman cartoons were based off of.
And it's, to this day, it's the measuring stick for Batman cartoons.
It is. It was a
honestly, it's not just the measuring stick for Batman cartoons. It's the measuring stick for superhero cartoons.
I was shocked when Paul Dini, like, when I realized he wrote Double Dragon, which was at the beginning when I watched it, his name was like, oh, that's great. And like, you can kind of see it because this is the thing, like, Double Dragon is a little more intelligent than it should be. I will say that, like,
we should blame Paul Dini for that.
It is Paul Dini. Like, don't get me wrong, it's dumb.
No, I mean, blame, like, him for the fact that it's more intelligent than it deserves to be.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's there is like a streak that goes through it where if you're an adult and you had to sit through this movie, there was things I think that you would have been able to.
There were little moments of footholds.
The RoboCop thing, like the news bits talking about the future. I can't remember any specific examples, but they were pretty funny, the news bits that they had. Like, it was clearly parodying the news and where society was going. Mm-hmm. That was smart shit you only could have gotten from Paul Dini.
Like, well, I don't know. You only could have gotten that from Paul Dini.
No, I mean, in this movie, you only could have
got
that because of Paul Dini.
Let me put it this way. Vanna White and George Hamilton were not riffing.
It wasn't
bits.
So. See, that was just a misunderstanding. I thought you meant out of all the writers in the world, you could only. No. I was like, come on now. But you're right. Out of the choices you have to look at for Double Dragon, it obviously came from Paul Dini.
But I would highly recommend anybody who wants to have a beer and watch a bad movie, check out Double Dragon. It's pretty fun.
Fill those seats so we don't have to.
Hey, paisanos, it's the Super Mario Brothers Super Show!
With the Mario Brothers and plumbing's a game, we're not like the others who get all the fame. If your sink is in trouble, you can call us on the double. We're faster than the others, you'll be hooked on the brothers. So hang on to your seat, get ready for adventure and remarkable feats. You'll meet Koopas and Troopas, the princess and the others. Hanging with the plumbers, you'll be hooked on the brothers to the brim.
Hi, I'm Biggs. I'm here to tell you about the wonderful opportunities afforded to you by subscribing to all the wonderful podcasts here at the Not Safe for Network. Subscribe to Montucky Skies at montuckyskies.blogspot.com, and you could find a career in woodworking, mechanic, or TV VCR repair. Subscribe to We Had a Good Life at wehadagoodlife.com, and you'll discover opportunities such as cobbler, fire and brimstone layer, or advanced lifeguard technician. Subscribe to Shooting the Shit Show at shootingtheshitshow.blogspot.com, and you'll love the prospects available in the field of cell phone sales, dragon grooming, or masters of the custodial arts. Subscribe to Real Roulette at realroulettewithzackandbiggs.blogspot.com, and you'll be awed by the chances to spread your wings in dot matrix printer sales, do-it-yourself manual writer, or subservient satanic minion. Subscribe to Box Office Battle at boxofficebattle.blogspot.com and explore the magnificent fields of farmhand personal assistant, snake oil salesman, or professional couch surfer. And don't forget to sharpen your workplace skills with the new podcast That's Debatable, coming soon. The Not Safe for Network is dedicated to help you find that shiny new job that you never knew you wanted.